Today we are going to discuss about the two controlling mental faculties out of the five. The five are, as we all know, faith and confidence, effort and energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. We have dealt in the last lecture about faith and confidence. So these are very strong and powerful mental states that we possessed. And if we can develop them, whenever these one of these fives are in the top level, every other mental state follow according to their will. But it must be in the top, first class quality. And if they hold that seat, all other mental factors follow according to their will. That's why they are called controlling faculties. So this effort and energy, the Pali word is called viriya. That is a very, very important mental factor. In Buddhist scriptures, every sutra, and even in Abhidhamma, everywhere you will and you can see these words. Because there is nothing worthwhile in the world can be accomplished without this effort. Without effort, nothing can be accomplished. And when you have a great effort, you will accomplish. Some people, because of the advantages, intelligence or wealth or connections, they can accomplish things or they can make things happen because of the status. But there are people who doesn't have that kind of great intelligence, connections or power or facility. But they really want it to happen and they put effort, endless effort. They will put 10 times more than the other person did to accomplish or to get something, that much. And when you put that kind of an effort, even without connection, even without power, even without facility, they will succeed. That's how powerful this effort is. So there's the two words, effort and energy, is applied in English for the word viriya in Pali. And the reason is both together combined will complete the sense of viriya. Because sometimes it's the grinding, the pushing, consistent application. That kind of effort is needed to make things happen. But there are sometimes what happens is you don't know where it comes from. That's the way you felt it. You have enormous amount of energy in your body. Then you must really expand and you must direct into a certain channel. And when you do that, you don't have to put grinding effort, consistent application of effort. It just flow, a whole amount of energy flow out, and it accomplished too. And that's also viriya. That one, I think by now you know from last Dhamma talk, sadda. When you have something, when you believe something strongly, when you believe with great confidence, with faith, As soon as you have that, automatically you don't know where this energy comes from. Your whole body is full of this energy. Simply energy, it is not out yet, but they are going to explode out into actions and words and actions. In other words, all the verbal and physical execution become is happening, but seems like happening effortlessly. Okay. Effortlessly, that energy. But again, it doesn't come from nowhere. It comes from that sadha, faith and confidence. So that's why viriya, you can call it energy and effort. In some cases, these verbal and physical executions or actions are produced effortlessly, but the work is done. And sometimes nothing comes out free. You really squeeze every ounce of your muscles and mind, physical muscle and mental muscle, to just push through. That's why effort and energy, viriya. And this one is crucial to succeed at anything and everything. But let's talk more specifically about our meditation, because we don't need to be arm waving. In a meditation, again, we all know when you come here first, we are all beginners here. You come here, you have a great curiosity. Maybe you have read some books or watched some videotapes or YouTubes, or some friends told you. And then there's a great curiosity and great desire. Because of that, it pushes you to attend this class. Okay? That pushes you. Nobody is pushing you. Nobody is twisting your arm. You automatically come here and you have a very keen interest and you're listening and you're following every instruction how to do sitting meditation and so on and so forth. And all these action, coming here, enrolling, sitting in a position that you are not used to, and giving a great attention for these 2 hours, that is because of sadha. That great confidence in this particular thing you are investigating, that great confidence, produce that energy, and that energy is converted into your verbal and physical actions. At this moment, up to this point, it is everything is being done effortlessly. Of course, the cause is sadha, faith and confidence. And you're practicing good, and most of you haven't practiced any meditation before, some of you has. But regardless, in general, to a lesser or greater degree, because of this cross-legged sitting position for an hour, the pain arises. When the pain arises, what happened? You want to stop. You want to change your position. It's told, don't change it. Okay. What happened is, you're having an internal tug of war. One part is want to be comfortable. Another part is no, if I do that, I will break my meditation, tug of war. And through that tug of war, some people give in. Okay. Give in, and then you change your position or you make yourself comfortable. But some people, they go through. They go through, it's painful, it's not nice, it's unpleasant, you want to change, but you know you want to change. As soon as you know you want to change, you don't change, and you just go on and on and on and on, observing that pain. So what it is, at this stage, the first free flow energy and free flow effort, effortless effort is gone. and that has carried you to a certain extent, and now this is more like a tug of war. There's no free flow energy and no free flow effort. Tug of war, but you hang in there. You muster your will, you muster your mind. You face that difficulty and push through, push through, push through. Observe the pain, observe the pain. The pains become worse and worse. Sometimes a little better, the same change around, but you don't give up. Here is the grinding effort. You can call it that as the second phase of effort. The first phase, so to speak, you get it for free. Not really free, because of your confidence in what you're doing, you got it. And when that has used up, the second phase is you have to really, with your sheer willpower, you go through this. And that is the second phase of effort. You really have to apply it. And you observe and you observe and you observe without giving up. Without giving up. And you observe in such a way, eventually you overcome that pain. In other words, that pain is not a problem for you anymore. The pain may totally disappear, but the pain may still exist, but you will find it down the line in a different form. Tolerable, manageable, piece of cake. You overcome that pain. But you have to go through the great painful period, great difficulty to reach to that stage. And there is another definition, or more precise definition, of effort. What is effort? Definition: the ability to overcome difficulty. The ability to overcome difficult situations, that is effort. Regardless what, you face a difficulty and you apply with everything that you have, mind and body, and you overcome it. And what did you do? You put great effort. Without putting that great effort, you will never overcome that difficulty. So here it is, definition of effort is, it's an ability to overcome difficult situation or difficulties. You overcome. And then after that, what happened was still, you simply overcome, but you have to still close the show. Close the shows mean there's more, okay? More space to walk, more period to go through. You can't go through those things by sitting down and doing nothing. You still have to persistently do what needs to be done. Whether you enjoyed it or you don't enjoy it, doesn't matter, because you are simply functioning the procedures that call for the end of this, let's say, show. The end of the show, till the curtain falls. You perform till the curtain falls. You do all you need to do, both physically and mentally, what is necessary without dropping till the curtain falls. That is the third phase of effort. So in here, what is effort? Effort is the ability to overcome difficulties. And effort is only one word. The original word is called viriya. And in the word viriya, there are two things underneath that: energy and effort. Energy itself is not gone into effort, but that energy is produced by confidence. And in turns, it provides you effortless effort, effortless execution of verbal actions and physical actions, and even the mental actions in some cases. That's what it is. And everywhere, whatever you are doing worthwhile, a project, a major cause, you will experience three phases of effort. Initial effort, and in the middle, we call it a launching effort. Okay, you have to launch. And finally, liberating effort to take it to the end. Three levels of efforts are required to succeed a project, a cause, or whatever difficulty you are facing in. That's effort, and that is energy. And in meditation too, you will find these things. First, you will find it very easy. I just give it you an example, it just in one sitting. In the long run too, you go through for about, let's say, 90 days retreat. You will find that about the first 2-3 weeks you do, you can go quite easily. And then after 2-3 days later, boredom sets in and so many obstacles sets in. And at that time, you really have to use your willpower and determination to apply effort to whatever needs to be done. And when you apply that about 2 months or so, eventually what happened was it's not as difficult as possible that could arise. But still, there's a little space that you have to walk. It become like a not that difficult, but still not that great interesting to complete it. Don't want to complete, oh, I've done it enough. Oh, that's good enough. That kind of excuse you give to yourself and you could fold it. But here, don't. You go right to the end. And that way you will complete, 90 days meditation, retreat. That kind of thing you will see. And that aspect of effort and energy is necessary when you practice Satipatthana Vipassana meditation. And the third one is mindfulness, sati. This one is the key word of our meditation. Our meditation is called in Pali Satipatthana Vipassana. Sati, okay, this mindfulness, patthana, places to store upon or put upon. Okay. There are certain groups of objects, the Buddha taught us, that we can apply our mindfulness. That is satipatthana, meaning of satipatthana. Just mindfulness alone is sati. But the practice we are doing is called satipatthana. In other words, it's an adjective we put in. We are not blindly doing it. We can and we must put every object that comes in front of us at the present moment. So it doesn't need further explanation. But still, Buddha doesn't teach us not only simply a formula to do, a procedure to do, instruction to do. Along with that instruction, he gives us some aspect of theory that apply directly to the practice so that we can also intellectually understand. In other words, Buddha didn't want us to be a blind follower. He wants us to be an informed follower. Okay? Informed follower on the path, not a blind follower. That's why he just put into a certain category, a certain aspect, and a certain discourses so that it explains what we are doing, how we are doing, and why we are doing. And that way it's all rounded, it's covered. That's why just say, be mindful of everything. Well, that's sufficient. But if he gives a little more, okay, mindful about one group, that's physicality, matter. Ah, that's a little more understanding. And another one is, be mindful about all the feelings and sensations you have in your life. Another group. Before, you just say everything. Now, when you put it into this little category, it gives you a more clearer vision what to do and how to do. And thirdly, okay, there's another one. While you're doing those things, there might be all sort of thoughts going through to you. And be aware of them when they come in. What kind of thoughts? Whether they belong to the past or the future. And also, what kind of mental factors are associated with these thoughts? Emotion associated with the thought. Or the qualities associated with thoughts. That's one group. So it becomes more interesting. And then he gives you another group. Okay. Well, let's call it this Dhamma group. Everything you see, seeing, seeing, you must stop at the moment of seeing. You must be mindful at the point of seeing. And at the point of hearing, the point of smelling, the point of tasting, the point of touching. All your senses and even the thoughts. The thought is, belongs to separately by itself, which we already saw, knowing about thinkings and all the emotions. Here is the Dhamma, is the five sense object. So when you give like that, oh, we can identify even more clearer. Oh, that's great, that's good. Oh, if we look at all these things, this cover everything. Before it's simply everything. Now he put everything into four different groups. Because he put it into four different groups, we call it four foundation. Four foundation or four groups or four places where we can apply our mindfulness. That is satipatthana. Okay, satipatthana. So mindfulness is that we must, first and foremost, be aware of, in general, everything that pops up in front of our field of attention at the present moment. Nothing before, nothing after. Because if it is before, that go to the past. After, that go to the future. And you, whatever you think about past and future is simply a projection, imagination, thinking, figuring out. But if you deal with it at the present moment, it is exactly as you have experienced. And based on the amount of focus and attention you can give upon that present moment, you will understand that object. It is not a second-hand news, third-hand news. It's not a projection, imagination. It's reality. It's the present moment. That's mindfulness. We know what objects to go in with four groups. We know in what time frame we have to put in. There's only three time zones, past, present, and future. Must be in the present. And then thirdly, when you are observing that object, or when you are noting that object, when you are applying your attention to that object, you must apply with great effort. See, the one we just talked about, great effort. That effort is, it applies to your attention. There's a lot of energy and effort goes into the application of the directing of the mind towards the object. And if you direct your mind to the object with great force means great energy, great effort, great force. It will really stick to the object. It will wrap around the object. It will penetrate through that object, and you will understand that object in every aspect that you possibly could. But if you say, it's rising, falling, rising, falling, rising, falling, and that's all that you know. And we have had many, many yogis. You meditate. What did you experience? Rising, falling. A week later, rising, falling. That's it. And that means the teachers know that amount of energy that you associate with the directing your mind towards that object is not strong enough. It is a mediocre. It is weak. It is feeble. That's why all that you can see is rising and falling and rising and falling. But when you apply with great energy, that observation goes, as we said, thoroughly, completely, all-rounded, penetratively and closely. How close? Close from the moment that object arises till it disappears. There's no period in between that you are not with that object. You know the moment it arises, you know the moment that is traversing, and then you know the moment that it disappears. That is another way of measuring how great effort you are applying to your mindfulness on the object. If you know the beginning to the end without the mind wandering away, then you have that complete, thorough mindfulness. When you have that complete, thorough mindfulness with great effort or energy behind that attention, then you experience every little characteristics that associated with it. Okay, now we all know, you see rising. Okay, rising is just one thing you know, is rising movement, falling movement. Yeah, I know, which is true, you know, you are not thinking anything. But at the same time, all that you know, there's this little rising movement and falling movement. Then you apply that great effort, and then you see, when it is rising, it is not one smooth little one rising. There are little intricate movements of rising. Some are little fast, some are slow. Some are two, three little successive moves. Along with it, you can feel the pressure increasing, increasing. Suddenly you can feel the stiffness, and also you can feel the fullness. And suddenly, everything stops. That's what you will come to see and experience. And you don't have to interpret anything. That is all that you see and all that experience. Do it again and do it again and do it again. This movement, this stiffness, this tension, this pressure, those are the specific characteristics. And when you observe that thousands of times, you begin to see them not as one group. They are individuals, individuals, events and process. And you see each an individual coming and going, coming and going, coming and going. You are experientially understanding the nature of impermanence. Not theoretically, you don't need to convert it into theoretical form. Oh, this is impermanence. Oh, here's rising, here's disappearing. No, just simply experience, 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 experience. First of all, they are not one bundle of many qualities. First of all, they come with bundle of qualities. Then this bundle of qualities, you begin to can sort out one by one by one. And then each one, you experience the arising and passing away. And that's all from the mindfulness. Apply with great effort and energy. directing towards the object. When you do like that, it's stuck with the object, and it stays with the object as long as that object lifespan is. Example is you shoot an arrow. If you don't apply the full strength, the arrow might not go through the target or stick to the target. It might not reach there. It might touch there and fall down. But if you apply a great effort, it will reach the target, it will penetrate the target, and it will stick with the target right at the eye's ball. That is samasati, the right mindfulness. And the right mindfulness cannot be established without that great application of energy and effort. They go hand in hand. So that is mindfulness. At this juncture, that will be sufficient. Now, five controlling mental faculties. First of all is faith and confidence. Due to faith and confidence, what happened? Energy and effort arises. In other words, faith and confidence is the cause. Energy and effort is the effect. And then there's a great effort and energy. When you applied it towards the mindfulness, what happened? You establish the samasati, the right and correct mindfulness. There's a mindfulness and there's a right mindfulness. The right mindfulness, the correct mindfulness, the superior mindfulness is the one that penetrates into the nature, specific characteristics, and later common characteristics of mind and matter. So due to effort and energy, mindfulness is established, or effort and energy is the cause, the right mindfulness is the effect. They are all cause and effect. Nothing is happening on its own. So with that, we covered three of the five. And the remaining two, we'll discuss in the next Dharma talk. May all of you be able to practice Satipatthana Vipassana meditation, and may you be able to develop five controlling mental faculties, which will lead you to the full understanding of mind and matter and reach to selflessness as soon as possible. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Buddham bhujemi. Dhammam bhujemi. Sangham bhujemi.